Come, spell weavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we are making old school young again. I'm your host and king of the boneheads, Ryan Howard, and tonight I am joined once again by one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. You guys know him and love him. He's the Netherlands' number one sex symbol. Ladies and gentlemen, Victor Gorchev will be here with us tonight. I'm looking forward to it. He's got a great campaign up right now on Kickstarter with 11 days to go. Modern necessities, modern setting rules for old school essentials. I'm going to drop the link here in chat right now, and I'll go ahead and share the campaign with you guys on the screen. Let me go ahead and bring this up here. Because I like Vic's killing it on this one. This is the biggest campaign that he's done so far. We are at $9,440 in USD. We've blown his goal out of the water. And so right now it's just, you know, icing on the cake to really show your love and support for this this Dutchman that we all know and love. So definitely give him a shot if you have not already. Definitely back this campaign. You're going to get some cool stuff that we'll talk about this evening. And of course, I would be remiss to not remind everyone that my campaign is also ongoing. We are currently at $4,722. We're fully funded. And just to go through it here, the Nighthaven poster is up now over on my campaign. We've got a little bit more Nighthaven stuff up here just so you guys can see kind of a look at what we've got going on in Nighthaven as well as Bellafalo. And we are at the stretch goal where I am now responsible for 6 magic items. I have conceptualized these magic items. They're very cool. We'll talk about them at a later date. That's it for my campaign. Of course, I want to remind everyone. Oh, let me drop a link in here too, just for those of you who have not backed it yet. And then also want to remind everyone that you can find kind of my musings on role-playing games over here on Substack, which is rollinbones.substack.com. I recently did an article that was all about RPG layout design and how to make it both informative and entertaining. As you can see here, I've got Cyborg as a negative example. So yeah, that's what you can find over on Substack. I've got a banger of an article coming out tomorrow that I think you guys will love. So yeah, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on the man of the hour, the man with the power, the man who is too sweet to be sour. He is just a great guy all around, ladies and gentlemen, Victor Gorchev.
Hey, everyone. And yeah, I'm more salty than sour usually, so.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Gotcha. How are you doing tonight?
Not too bad. Like I mentioned right before I jumped on, I was fishing. I was doing some virtual fishing. I was catching pike. Because I'm a boomer, and instead of playing shooters like I should be doing probably, I'm playing fishing games. So,
Now, did you put on the shirt that you're wearing specifically because you were playing a fishing game?
Just a happy coincidence.
All right. Fair enough. All right. So, yeah, I mean, let's not bury the lead here. You've got this awesome campaign here. A lot of people are familiar with the work that you've done. I mean, you've been on here a few times, but just to remind everyone who isn't familiar with Vic or hasn't seen him on here before, what is it that you are looking to accomplish with your work and specifically this campaign?
So in general, what I'm kind of looking to accomplish is bring back that kind of like urban fantasy stuff that was really popular in like the late 90s, early 2000s with like D20 Modern, Shadowrun to a degree. I'll lump that in there, even though it's cyberpunk, but you know, it still had some of those same elements. And that was kind of like my tabletop childhood, so to speak. That's the kind of stuff I grew up on, so to speak. And I was always really into it. And in my opinion, it's kind of fallen by the wayside, and I want to bring it back. And if at the same time I can be one of the front runners of like, you know, this new movement to bring that back, that's just cool, I guess. Other than that, old school or modern necessities, it's for old school essentials, modern rules that you can just slap on top of normal old school essentials, gun rules, equipment, vehicles, 20 modern themed classes, stuff like that. And you can just combine it with like old school modules if you want. You could run Isle of Dread with my rules and do like some kind of Jurassic Park type thing, you know, dealing with dinosaurs while you're like some mercenary with like a 50 cal. You could do Keep on the Borderlands. I actually ran that myself with my rules and it went really well, which was really fun. So just stuff like that. Sky's the limit, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I really like that you've done this time around with the stretch goals, you've included these kind of rule additions to allow people to play, not just in modern settings, but you've also got a single action, which has been unlocked through stretch goals, which is Wild West rules, kind of using the modern necessities framework. And then also, you mentioned cyberpunk. We do now have Cutting Edge unlocked, which is kind of your take on cyberpunk.
Yeah, definitely. So I was originally considering, like, should I put it all in one book? But I don't know. I think that kind of muddies the waters a little. Mm-hmm. I decided to keep them separate and, yeah, just make them as stretch goals. And, yeah, if you want to just do modern, you buy modern necessities. And that's, like, all the rules are included in that, like how to use your firearms, how to use your vehicles and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to do something else, like, you know, steampunk Weird West, or you want to do, like, cyberpunk, that's when you get, like, those other supplements. And you just slap those on top of modern necessities and you're good to go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's, I think that'll kind of help in the long run, because then you have, especially if you release these independently from each other on drive-through, people who maybe don't necessarily want to run the modern campaign might still look at single action and be like, oh, here's a cool Weird West alternative to some of the other games out there. Yeah. Let me pick that one up. Or here's a cool cyberpunk that uses old, you know, OSE as the engine behind it. Let me pick that up. I think that'll really kind of do you some good there, just from a marketing perspective.
Well, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm also a capitalist and I want to make money. So they still have to buy modern necessities if they want to use that. So all the main rules are modern necessities, and then just all the additions to do cyberpunk stuff. So cyberpunk themed classes, I'm putting in like, you know, custom hacking rules and putting in like cybernetics and stuff like that. That's when you get Cutting Edge. But if you want the main rules, you need modern necessities. So you can't just buy Cutting Edge and it'll be done.
Yep. And then for anyone wondering about like, adventure support, we do now also have the stretch goal unlocked for Bunker in the Badlands, which is a full adventure module for, taking characters from level 1 to level 3.
Yeah, definitely. I mentioned Keep on the Borderlands, and this is going to be kind of my homage to that. So it's going to have my take on like the Caves of Chaos. I'm probably going to put in like a bunch of other random stuff that wasn't in Keep on the Borderlands, because let's be honest, Keep on the Borderlands is a little bit bare bones. Mm-hmm. But I want to just pay homage to it. So and it's going to be set in what's kind of going to be the default setting for modern necessities. You can completely ignore it if you want, but I wanted a setting to kind of like do stuff in. So I settled on like this magical post-apocalypse kind of deal. Like what if you mix Shadowrun with Stalker and like a little bit of Rifts, like that kind of stuff. And that's going to be the main setting, so to speak. But ultimately, it's just a toolkit to do with what you want.
Mm-hmm. And Dundermoose here in chat, I want to play Helldivers with Dragons and Trolls.
Oh, yeah, you definitely could.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah,
That's basically like Fantasy Starship Troopers.
Yeah. Well, what if, all this fantasy stuff has taken over, like, the surface world, and humanity has to live in, like, these giant airships, but meanwhile, you know, they have to go jump down to get, like, resources and stuff. So, yeah, maybe you're one of those special units that jumps down, and you try to get the resources while you're holding off, like, orc hordes and stuff. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've talked a little bit about stuff that I would do in Modern Necessities. At some point, I'm going to revisit that kind of Highlander Devil May Cry thing that I was talking about with Modern Necessities. I think that would be fun to do. But like people often unfairly take a look at this kind of mix of genres and just immediately go, pass, it's not for me. And I think if more people like took a second look or just gave it a thought for a second, instead of just immediately having that knee jerk reaction of, oh, you're putting guns in my fantasy, I don't want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so much cool stuff that you can do.
Yeah, definitely. You could do some Dresden Files type thing. It's like just the modern world. 99% of people just think like, you know, vampires don't exist, but maybe they actually do. And you're one of the few that knows they do. And maybe you hunt them. Who knows? Maybe you're in like virtual New York hunting vampires and you have to go into like, you know, the massive like network of like old subway tunnels and sewers and stuff that are beneath the city to hunt monsters. Like, that's all sorts of stuff you can do. It doesn't have to be bright per se. It doesn't have to be like, you know, some crazy off the wall stuff. It could just be something like that. So like I said, it's a toolkit and what you do with it is up to you. So yeah, just be creative.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is Rex Teal's pointing this out here in chat. It's a kitchen sink done right. Although it's more of a toolbox. Yeah. This is something that Lord Mateus has been talking about in the Basic Experts Gilded server as well. There's a lot of people right now who are putting out rule sets, and not to like fully put that down, I know what we're dealing with here is also partially a rule set, but what Lord Mateus is talking about is everyone's kind of creating their own ecosystem in which to play in, but it's probably better for the overall consumer to give them a box of tools that they can use kind of in whatever setting they want to use. And now OSE has kind of wide adoption right now. So like OSE is very popular, but what you've done here, I think successfully based on what I've seen from your work in the past is give people that toolbox. So like, hey, you want to run really anything modern, whether it's just kind of like straight up, no fantasy modern stuff all the way through, you know, like you walk down the street and run into a beholder in a business suit or whatever the fuck, you've given people the ability to like kind of go all the way across that spectrum with your work.
Yeah. And yeah, that was kind of my goal because that's how I also approach my games, especially when I'm like running one shots and stuff. Like I have like severe creative, ADHD when it comes to like my interests. So one day I might want to do that Western Files thing. The next day I might want to be on like Dinosaur Island. And then the next I might want to just do like some straight up like Call of Duty stuff without any fantasy elements. So that's how I set out to make Modern Necessities. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Dunder Moose in chat here wants to run basically the Muppets Take Baghdad. But
yeah, why not? Sure.
Never change, bros. Never change. Yeah. to answer an earlier question here in chat, just a passerby, those are not letter cases behind me. Those are actually miniatures that I painted. They're not very visible from this distance, but those are miniatures that I painted behind me, and then board games.
Did I say HD? Oh, hello. I'm dumb. I'm dumb in Dutch. You'll have to forgive me.
Hi, Dutch. Hello, Dublin. Or ADHD in high definition.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm high def. There we go. Yeah. My game's high def.
But yeah, I mean, again, like, hats off to the artists that you use. I know we've talked about several of the artists that you use in the past. I'm going to bring up the campaign here in just a second. Just got to scroll up to the top again. There's some great pieces here that really kind of, I think, sell people on just the like the ecosystem that you have. So like just this cover, the like modern soldier orc and then the dark elf with the karambit, that right there, that's a cool dichotomy.
Yeah, the John Wick elf. Yep.
Yeah.
So that kind of implies like you can do like a military campaign, or you can do like that more like, you know, John Wickish type stuff.
And then to the goofball that was asking if that was a wedding ring, it's very clearly a karambit.
Yeah.
You moron.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy was a jerk.
But then, like, this piece here as well, this, like, goblin gangster, that's friggin' cool. I love that stuff.
Yeah, that just brings to mind, like, you know, the Sopranos, but what if, you know, the goblins or orcs or whatever, or hobgoblins or bugbears, like, you know. Whatever.
Who did this piece?
That's an artist called Nolan Collins. He's a friend of Adam Black. You might know Adam Black, right? He's on the Guild server and stuff. So Adam Black used to do art for me, but he kind of like semi-retired, and I don't think he was really feeling the whole modern thing. So he was like, he kind of like dipped out, but he was like, but I know an artist who is really good at that stuff. I'll give you his contact information. So yeah, I just emailed him, and he jumped right on the chance to do some cool like urban fantasy type stuff. And
this art very much reminds me of Steve Dillon, the guy who did a whole bunch of like early 2000s and late 90s Punisher stuff.
Yeah I know what you mean. Yeah,
and there's also there's a little bit, staying on that same subject of late 90s Punisher, there's also a little bit of Tim Bradstreet.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I would love some Tim Bradstreet art as well, but yeah.
I've tried to get him on the show before. I have not ever heard back from him.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Tim Bradstreet. I have, you know, to completely change the subject, I have, like, a Deadlands card game, and a lot of the art in that is Tim Bradstreet.
Yep. Yeah, that early Deadlands stuff that, you know, so like Tim Bradstreet did some, and then Brahm actually did some for the like very first edition of Deadlands. That's all like solid gold. That's some Kino right there.
Agreed.
Especially, now I'm just thinking of Steve Dillon, because he did Preacher as well, and Preacher had the whole Saint of Killers arc going on. So that he'd have made some good Western art too.
Yeah, and, you know, to put it back on modern necessities, you could definitely want something like Preacher if you want. Like, if I like dealing with demons and angels and, like, you know, crazy, like, secret societies and stuff.
But no, you've got yourself a really good campaign here. I've been over the moon to watch how your campaigns have grown. When I launched my campaign, you said... you reminded me that when you launched your first campaign, like, it was a slog, and there was concern kind of within yourself of whether or not you'd get funded. But now, seeing this one was funded in 24 hours.
Yeah, so. Definitely. The first one was like literally funded like last minute, like the last couple hours, I think. So that was like nail biting. And this one funded in 24 hours. So it was like really awesome.
And then Dunder Moose again here has a question. How does this version compare to the last version?
Admittedly, the last version I wrote in like 3 weeks, because this was like right after the OGL thing. And that kind of like pulled the rug out from under me, because I was like focusing on that 5e modern stuff. And like all these plans for it, I was like planning all these expansions and supplements. And then the OGL thing happened like literally a couple of weeks after my Kickstarter ended. So it made the future of that like really uncertain if I could even like keep using 5e at all. So I was like, well, what's the next big game out there? And it's like, well, Old School Essentials is really big. I had already kind of like tried my hand at like OSR modern stuff with Simple Modernity, which became like a copper seller. So I knew people, you know, were interested in that stuff. So kind of to test the waters a little bit more, I ended up burning the midnight oil, so to speak, for like 3 weeks. I wrote the first Modern Necessities, put it out there. It ended up becoming a silver seller. It apparently has gotten me fans because I was seeing people on Facebook post earlier. It's like, oh, I can't wait to see what the Scrying Dutchman is going to do next. I'm like, wait, when did this happen? But yeah, like, so people liked it. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to focus on that. And since I wrote it in 2 weeks, it's a little bit rough around the edges. I messed up some stuff. I missed some stuff. I could have done better in some areas. So this is basically like, you know, this is almost like the second edition, basically.
Yeah.
So it's going to be expanded. It's going to be more polished. It's going to, you know, I'm going to try to not mess up mechanics. you know, there was some stuff in Old School Essentials that I didn't quite understand. And then in Modern Necessities, like, you know, there's some stuff that shouldn't be there. So, yeah, it's just going to be like the perfected and most much expanded version, basically.
Yeah. Oh, I think we're all looking forward to it. This is, again, there's not a lot of people that are playing in this sandbox. There's not a lot of competition for this kind of modern material. No. So I think providing, like, out of the gate, a very high quality product, it like this is going to be great. Like, a lot of people are going to pick up on this, I think, especially... Yeah. Going from copper seller to silver seller, I hope this gets to like Electrum or beyond seller. This thing is great.
I would love a gold someday. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I want to really like make this good so it puts me on the map. So even just, you know, the successful Kickstarter aside, I hope that people afterward will buy it. They will see that it's awesome, word will spread, and then maybe once I do my next Kickstarter for, like, you know, another, like, you know, supplement or adventure or whatever, like, it'll be even bigger, who knows. But
let me put it this way: worse designers than you have hit Electrum and Platinum, so
yeah, that's true. And I've also gotten like 500,000 on Kickstarter, so
Now, to switch the subject entirely, what are your thoughts on tents and role-playing games?
Bring them or you die in the rain. I don't know. Well, we talked about it a little bit before the stream started. So, okay, if I'm playing with newbies and they forget to bring, like, important equipment, even though they know that we're going to do, like, you know, a survival hex crawl or something, and they didn't bring a tent, but they're new to RPGs or, you know, they're just dummies, my dumb fat friends that don't know any better, I'm like, okay, you can have a tent. We'll hand wave it. You have a tent. But in this whole online discussion that's happening, you know, the expectation should be that you're talking to, like, veteran gamers. And so it's kind of silly, like, you know, that they're like, I know, whatever. Just who cares about tents?
Yeah, there's... All of this kicked off... yesterday, our good friend Crossface, as he often does, made a post over on Twitter, and let me just go ahead and share this so that we can bring those of you who, I don't know, do more important things with your lives than argue with degenerates on Twitter. Crossface posted equipment packs being the default for campaign play in 5th edition, and how typical character creation ignores equipment lists as a whole is a disservice to the game and the players both. Do you have a tent? I don't know. What's in an explorer's pack? This is where all of this kicked off. And so there's been a lot of discussion over this. I waded into it today because apparently I hate myself. And just... There's so much stupidity around all of this. There seems to be a whole section or subsection of role-playing game Twitter that seems to believe that you can just kind of hand wave away things that quote unquote aren't fun and your game is still okay. Like your game is still going to be fine. When you start undercutting things like, did you bring a basic survival necessities out of your game? You start to chip away at the foundation of the challenge of role-playing games.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, and I made this point on my own Twitter and ended up starting multiple slogs of just complete nonsense over this. You're just a hop, skip, and a jump away from going, you know, okay, my character is so hyper competent at survival, you know, they've always got what they needed. You know, a scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent, you know, that kind of stuff. Once you establish, okay, yes, I have all the survival necessities that I need at all times, you're very close to, well, my character is a ranger and is familiar with, you know, traveling and keeping an ear out for trouble. So, these bandits are not going to be able to sneak up on us. They just can't do it. I'm too good for that. And then once you knock down that pillar, again, people call this a slippery slope fallacy, but you see it, you've already seen it happen in RPG design. You get to a point where people are saying, well, you know, my character is an expert swordsman. Why would he need to roll to attack? Wouldn't he just hit every single time? And there is a major game out there that is championing that idea.
Well, I just don't get why people online insist on arguing from like the casual position. And like, I get it. I've won games and I've been in games that are very casual. And it's like, you know, we're not even really tracking rations and stuff like that. But I'm not interested in talking about really those on Twitter. If I'm discussing tabletop games on Twitter, I want to discuss them, you know, rules is written. I want to have like a bit more of an in-depth discussion, basically. And but then people will jump in and it's like, yeah, who gives a shit? Just rule of cool. It's like, well, no, I'm not interested in that. I want to discuss the rules and like implications of not like, you know, bringing a tent, because unlike what people say, in 5th edition, there actually are like wilderness survival rules. There's like effects of weather on your character, like all this stuff. And that's the discussion I'm interested in. Mm. It's like, because you mentioned before the stream, you mentioned armor, like armed assault. Okay, yeah. People on Twitter are like discussing armed assault. They're discussing like, what kind of ammunition should I bring for like this exact situation? What kind of ammunition should I use for like CQC and stuff like that? And then I jump in and it's like, lol, whatever, just bring whatever ammunition, dummy, who cares? Like, and then I act surprised when like, you know, these like armor nerds, these autistic armor nerds are like, tell me to fuck off. Like, and that's basically the same thing.
Yeah, like, people don't seem to realize what kind of games these games are.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you can play that like Professor Dungeon Master style of game where everything's hand waved, everything's abstracted away, and it's just, you know, we're going to cut straight to the action. This is all going to be, you know, what's fun, what's, you know, whatever about the game. You can play that way, but, you know, so many people get burnt playing that way. They're just like, it's not fun. There's no challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
But once you introduce these ideas, and they don't have to be complicated, you know, ARMA can be kind of a crunchy video game experience. You don't even necessarily have to go that complicated to make something like this matter. It's just a matter of, you know, even if you do use equipment packs, even though Crossface was kind of lamenting their existence, did you bring the cold weather survival equipment pack? No. Well, you know, you're going to be in for a rough time because we're going up that mountain over there. That's where the dungeon is up at the top of that snowy mountain. So, you know, even, you know, you didn't bring your cold weather gear. Have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well. So, I don't know. There's, and this is something that I posted about today, and this ties into a lot of the other kind of discourse that's been going on. Maybe before I get to that post, we didn't talk about this beforehand. The wheelchair discourse is back.
Mm-hmm. I've been ignoring it because it's stupid.
It is. Like,
I don't enjoy it.
Yeah. The The combat wheelchairs in role-playing games, and this all came up around when Daggerheart released, I guess it's quick start rules, or I don't know, whatever you call whatever it was they released for Daggerheart, and they had an entire section of the credits dedicated to, here's the guy who, I guess, threatened us until we put the combat wheelchair in the game.
Yeah.
All of the, like, the existence of the combat wheelchair in a fantasy environment, you have so many options. If you have a magical conveyance for your crippled character, you mm-hmm. could have spider legs. You could have a flying carpet. You could hire four well-trained mercenaries to carry you around on a palanquin.
Yeah.
I was talking about this in the Gilded server. I was told a legend when I took Kung Fu. I was told a legend by my Sifu that the man who taught his Sifu was carried around on a palanquin by four of his students who were always armed. Mm-hmm. And one day while they were carrying him, they were attacked by a rival school. And so they got into a fight while holding this Kung Fu master on his palanquin, and they didn't drop him. Now,
yeah,
this could all be complete bullshit, and it probably is, but that's a cool story.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I'm not a big fan of. I'm not a big fan of the whole wheelchair thing. It's virtue signaling at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I'm actually disabled in real life. Like, I'm like legally disabled. So, but even then, I'm apparently not allowed to talk about it. But that's like you said, there's other avenues to play like disabled characters. I've played like blind characters. I've played like, you know, the Zatoichi, the blind fury, like Wodka Howard type. But I had to take feats. I had to take like blind fighting, like all that stuff to like overcome the some of the limitations. But some of the other limitations still remained. But that was like half the fun of playing a character like that. Like, you know, dealing with those limitations. But then, you know, you see the combat wheelchair and the character that's using it is better at fighting and anything than like the person outside of the wheelchair. They have like all these advantages and bonuses and stuff like that. It's, yeah, it's just silly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, that's what it comes down to. That's why it's a wheelchair. It's a wheelchair because in our world, it's a wheelchair and it's a way of signaling that someone has been included, even though Malachi makes a point here. You can have your mind magically put into a warforged. You can literally be a fantasy cyborg if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But like, all of this kind of comes around to this point that I made today. And I was thinking about it in terms of the movie Demolition Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the scene in Demolition Man where they go back to Huxley's apartment and she goes, "Do you want to have sex?" And then brings out the helmets.
Yeah.
And they just sit there across from each other with these weird helmets on.
Yeah, yeah, I know that, what you mean.
Like, that to me represents the way people play role-playing games now. They don't actually play the game. They pretend that they play the game. The game to them is basically talking about the game and existing in like the ethos of the game and creating characters and having character art and all that stuff. But like at the end of the day, very few of them actually get to a table and roll dice. And of those few, a whole bunch of them only do it for like a few sessions at a time. So like this whole discourse, this whole kind of RPG ethos that we live in now is built around people who have never actually interfaced with the game. They are interfacing with the game in this distant, sterile way that involves them kind of getting away from anything that could be potentially uncomfortable or difficult or challenging about playing a game in a social environment with other people. but somehow they get to run the discourse.
Yeah, they're engaging with like the culture rather than the actual game, and it's a very specific culture. And yeah, and what bothers me about the whole wheelchair thing isn't even necessarily the wheelchair. If you want to have a character in a wheelchair, fine, I guess, but you're gonna deal with the consequences.
Yeah,
it's gonna be really hard to like, you know, wall across that forest floor or get up those stairs. You'd better find like party members that are willing to like carry you and all that stuff. It's probably gonna be hard to be a melee fighter in a wheelchair. I'm not gonna let you like pop wheelies and like spin around like you're the Witcher, but you're in like a wheelchair. So that's fine, but yeah, like I said, you have to deal with the consequences. But then, if you say that, it's like, yeah, you can have a wheelchair, but there's consequences. You're like evil, you're a bigot or whatever. So they want to have like that social currency, that you know, those sweet like virtue signal bucks, but they don't want to like deal with any of the drawbacks. And then, yeah, I'm just like automatically against something where if you even remotely disagree, the immediate reaction is to call you a bigot. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this. There's a great Thomas Sowell quote that I use often on this show. There are no solutions, only trade-offs.
Yeah.
But people don't want to live with trade-offs. They don't. Everyone wants the like perfect solution where, yes, I can be my wheelchair character, but I don't actually have to have the consequences of that.
Yeah.
No one is willing to accept the trade-offs. And yeah. Like, honestly, I don't want those people in my hobby. I don't want them around anymore. I want them to go away and shut up.
Yeah. Well, like those blind characters that I played. So you could take the blind fighting feat and, you know, it makes it so you don't need to, you don't need to see to like, you know, be able to hit stuff. You don't get that -4 or disadvantage or whatever it is for like, you know, darkness and being blind. But, You can't sprint, because if you sprint, you'll fucking fall on your face. So, you know, there's like all these drawbacks still. And that, like I said, that's like half the fun. That's the trade-off for playing like a character where you're like, you know, the unassuming blind Zatoichi dude who suddenly is like slaying dudes, even though he can't see.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of characters I like. I've played plenty of disabled characters. I've played mute characters. I've played deaf characters. I've played characters with like arms missing, with legs missing and stuff. But if there's a drawback, I dealt with that drawback. And like I said, that's half the fun of role-playing like that.
Mm. Yeah, and if I think one of the best games that has kind of situations where you can end up with disabilities that you have to deal with is Traveler.
Yeah.
The way that Traveler does its character creation, where you can, you know, go for that extra tour, but you end up losing your arm or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a cool way to incorporate kind of these characters with disabilities where you do have to suffer a little bit of a penalty, but there's some kind of bonus that comes along with it. One of my favorite movies, and I don't know if you've seen this movie. I'm pretty sure you have. Just it's right up your alley if you haven't. The Book of Eli with Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Spoilers for a 15-year-old movie at this point, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, it's revealed that Eli is blind and has been blind the whole time.
Yeah.
And like he kicks a lot of ass in that movie, but by the end of the movie, the blindness kind of catches up with him and you run into a situation where, oh yeah, he can't overcome this anymore. He's run out of tricks in his bag and now like it's gotten serious.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff like that's cool. That's, you know, that's playing at a different level because you've taken on, to use Savage Worlds parlance. I know we've, you know, Malachi's in chat here and he is a Savage Worlds enjoyer as much as I am. The edges and hindrances where you can take on things that make your character a little weaker or make them suffer in certain aspects, but then you can also take on edges that, you know, make you a little bit better at something. That's the way to handle this.
Yeah.
Like, and it's obvious and it's been obvious for a long time, but no one wants to hear it or wants to deal with it because they don't actually want to play the game. They want to signal that they're being good people while pretending to play the game, I guess.
Yeah. Well, those edges and like the penalties thing, that's part of like a lot of games, actually. Savage Worlds has that. Twice That had that back in the day that I used to play. I'm pretty sure Shadow One has it. I can't really remember, but I'm pretty sure Shadow One has like a similar system where you can take like drawbacks and it gives you more points to put into, you know, the benefits. And a drawback could be pretty severe. Excuse me. But yeah, that games used to incorporate that, where you could have like, you know, a disability and you had to roleplay the disability at the very least. It might not give you like mechanical disadvantages per se, but you were forced to roleplay them. And then, yeah, you got some sort of benefit. And then I was thinking like Dragonlance, like Wasteland. Wasteland is very sickly. He's like, you know, he's like this sickly dude, but he's also like one of the most powerful magic users in that world, if not the most powerful. And yeah, but he still was like physically frail. Like, you know, he couldn't do everything physically. Like in game terms, he maybe had like, you know, 5 strength or something. And then like, you know, 6 dex if he was lucky. And then, you know, like 2 con, like something like that. But then, you know, his intelligence is like, you know, 27. And, you know, he can cast all these like all these crazy spells. And yeah, those characters to me are like way more fun than just, yeah, I'm disabled, but my combat wheelchair is like it has all these bonuses, and it actually makes me better than the able-bodied fighter. Like, no, that's just silly.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't... there's this... I feel like I've said the same thing like 5 different times, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. So, some people, I feel like, just need to hear it 5 different times, but... there's this sense of... you want to start the game already powerful, or you've already overcome the disability, even though like the point, like the narrative point of having a character with a disability to overcome is to show them overcoming it.
Yeah.
And they just want to skip to the end part. They don't want to see how Oracle went from bleeding out, lying on the floor of her apartment after the Joker shot her through the spine, to learning how to deal with the chair and, you know, becoming Oracle. They just want to cut to it.
Well, like the blind character, like, example, couldn't think of the word, example. So you usually need like a feat or something to like overcome that. Like, well, if you're level 1, you might not get a feat immediately. So you might be playing that character up until like level 3-4, until you get your first feat, just completely gimped. But that's the trade-off. Like, once you get to, like, level 3-4 and you can take that blind fighting ability and you can finally be, like, you know, Rutger Hauer in Blind Fury, then you feel, like, really awesome about it because you managed to survive this whole time to actually get to this point. But, yeah.
Malachi has posted Raceland stats here. This is some special snowflake character bullshit. Like,
yeah. Those stats do not represent how he, like, is...
Raceland doesn't have a single negative. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that does not at all portray how he's or reflect how he's actually portrayed.
He should be at like a con 8, strength 6.
Yeah.
Dexterity should not be a 16.
No.
This is a stat array where I would like make someone roll it again in front of me if I saw this. Like, come on now. Stupid second edition.
Yeah, those stats do not reflect the actual reality, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That looks like stats that they just put in so those characters didn't feel too gimped.
Yeah. Well, and that's, like, this is kind of the problem when you look at those, even original, like, TSR adventures where they put in, like, the characters from the novels. Like, their stats are impossible.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, you're trying to stat a fictional character, and fictional characters don't have to be so specialized as RPG characters.
Yeah.
So, like, Dritz, I don't think, has a single stat that would give him a bonus less than +2.
Yeah.
In anything.
Well, the funny thing is, like, you know, you take Dwist and he's like, oh, it's a level 6 fighter and a level 5 ranger and, like, you know, a level whatever, like 2 barbarian, because he did spend the time as a barbarian. And it's like, okay, if I make that similar character and I try to do all the stuff that he does in the books, I will die immediately.
Yeah.
Like, no matter the stats, I will just horribly die. But then, you know, in the book, he's like doing all this awesome shit. He's fighting dragons. He's fighting like the best assassin in the Forgotten Realms, you know, like all this stuff. So yeah, the stats don't always reflect like, you know, what they portray in the stories.
Mm-hmm. And that's Calvinoni here points out that the writing takes liberties. And this is kind of the problem that I have in retrospect looking at TSR setting material, is because they were so focused on kind of creating these fantasy novels, because the fantasy novels did very well for them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, these settings that it's railroads connected together, and you've got these kind of special snowflake characters that can't really be messed with. And even if you like roll up your own characters and use them, you're not going to hold a candle to the book characters. You know, if your party runs across Dritz Duwarden, he's going to mop the floor with you. And so you might as well just play as Dritz and Wolfgar and Caddy Bree instead of bringing your own characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, Malachi, even if they are his stats in 1E AD&D, which I don't doubt you, it's the same thing. It's the same philosophy there of like, these are the special characters that you should be playing. And I take so much flack for this, and I make no apologies for it. This is why I don't like Dragonlance. This is why I hate Dragonlance, because Dragonlance is responsible for all this shit.
I don't know enough about Dragonlance. I read like the first book in Dutch like years ago, and it was alright, but you could definitely tell it was basically like a play report.
Yeah.
And it was fun, but yeah. But I never really became like a huge fan. Maybe because I read it in Dutch and there's something lost in the translation, but yeah.
I don't know. Not only does it read like a play report, it reads like a play report that someone was lying about.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you. Like a story game was play report.
Yeah. But yeah, Chance makes a good point here in chat. Some people having average stats means your PC is essentially crippled. And this is kind of like, you know, this is 5e brain that makes people think this way, where, you know, if you don't have multiple plus threes and like even more plus twos and stuff like that, you have a character that's a non-starter.
Yeah.
There were a ton of characters that had, you know, negative stat bonuses in the olden days. That's just like, that's the way it was. It happens sometimes. And even if you end up being like a fighter that has a 9 strength, you still have your bonus to hit. And you've got archetypes of other fighters to look at from fiction that show you how to play, you know, a quote unquote suboptimal fighter.
Yeah. Well, speaking of like disabled characters and, stories, Farfd, I can never pronounce his dumb name, Farfd, like he's missing his hand eventually.
Yeah.
And Farfd loses his hand. Yeah. Farfd. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, the Mauser, he has a disability. He's a manlet.
Yeah.
He's a poncho goblin.
Oh, I hope he hears that.
Yeah.
But yeah, even like, you know, there's the question of whether or not Elric is like, if he's a fighter, dude's got a terrible con score.
Yeah.
Probably not very strong either.
Yeah, maybe the sword like gives him like a bonus, I guess, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but and Jonathan Frost here, optimization is a disease, and it's, you know, optimization is just kind of a symptom of the larger thing that we've been talking about, where character or players are always insisting that the character be prepared and be ready for the situation ahead of them. You know, of course I brought my tent. My character's not a moron. When you allow that to happen at the table, you miss out on the potential adventure of, okay, you don't have a tent. There's a snowstorm. You're going to have to find shelter. Here's a cave. Oh, there's something in the cave.
Yeah.
Every time you close off the door of something going wrong or some kind of inconvenience to your player characters, or some kind of setback, you're closing off doors to adventure. And then you just have, you know, basically a dark ride at an amusement park where you're moving from scene to scene and you know you're going to reach the end because, you know, you're on a dark ride at an amusement park.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like you said, you're closing off opportunities. So what if you run out of rations? Well, now you have to go like hunting and scavenging. Maybe that, you know, you run into like some cool random encounter, or you find like an area you hadn't discovered yet. Like, so yeah, I fully agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of, you know, to take us back into the realm of modern necessities here and tie that in, you know, there's cool stuff that can happen in, you know, modern type games as far as, mm-hmm. you know, adventuring in that regard. You know, everyone loves the story of wandering into the mountains and running across like mutant hillbillies or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of thing that's not going to happen if your character always brought a tent.
Well, like, what if you didn't bring your cell phone? You know, yeah. You're in the middle of the woods without your cell phone. It's like, well, can I just have a cell phone? I would be smart enough to bring my cell phone. It's like, well, people in real life aren't smart enough to bring their cell phone while they go hiking. Like, why would you be? And so, no, you didn't bring your cell phone. Have fun, you know, getting lost and trying to get out of here while the mutant hillbillies are hunting you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's... I don't know. I feel like I'm an old man yelling at a cloud right now. God. Twitter. Twitter is stupid.
Yeah. I've got my Twitter pretty well curated, luckily. I mean, I still see stupid discussions, but I just stay out of them. But the worst of all the annoying stuff is usually pretty far from my view.
Now, let me ask you this, kind of on the subject of Twitter and Twitter arguments and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now that you are like fully finding yourself in this position of creator,
yeah,
has that changed your outlook on whether or not to engage in, like, to climb in the mud pit on Twitter? Because I have some thoughts about that, but I want to hear your thoughts before I...
Definitely. Like, hugely. Like, even maybe 3-4 years ago, I was still arguing about politics on Twitter. I was, like, arguing about... I'm not even going to mention it, but, like, you know, culture war stuff and politics. And then I made the conscious decision when I started, like, publishing stuff to, like, stop that. So that was, like, the initial step. Don't mention stupid politics. Don't mention stupid culture war stuff too much. I was still arguing with people about, like, you know, should you bring a tent, like that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. up until maybe early last year, and then you know, all the stuff happened that you know about, and then after that I took the next step, and it's like, yeah, I'm not even really gonna do that anymore. I'm just gonna stay out of it. I just want to like be seen as like a neutral party. I want everyone to be able to like, you know, come to me and buy my game and enjoy it at the end of the day. I might say some stuff that I probably shouldn't on streams like this, but you know, it's harder to keep yourself in check when you're just like chatting and you're drinking a few energy drinks with whiskey in it. But but as far as like Twitter goes, yeah, I definitely took like conscious steps to not get into the mud pits, as you say. Because me personally, if I like see creators, like if I see creators that I really like and they're just talking shit on Twitter, it turns me off. So I don't want to be one of those people that turns people off, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this, and I've talked about this a little bit with John, the basic expert. I talked a little bit about this with my business partner, Wonky.
Mm-hmm.
There's this distinction between talkers and doers.
Yeah.
And on Twitter, it's a lot of talkers.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people who want to have their voice heard. They want to, you know, get people to acknowledge their existence. They're crying out for someone, please listen to me.
Yeah.
But on the other side, you've got people who are producing something that people can talk about. You've got, you know, people that are producing games like Modern Necessities. You are not just voicing opinions, but you are taking those opinions, formulating them into a product, putting it out there and saying, this is my treatise on how modern firearms should be used in fantasy settings.
Exactly.
If you want to know my thoughts on this, you know, I'm not going to post a big, long Twitter thread. I'm not going to jump into this shit-slinging competition with people on Twitter. Here's a book that I wrote, that I took time and put effort into and got art and layout done for. This is my statement.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I feel like I've come around to, and I'm not as tenured a creator as you or John. I'm just kind of getting my feet under me as far as putting stuff out there. But there's this sense of, and I say this having spent a very long portion of the day arguing with people on Twitter.
Yeah.
But like, there's this sense of, I need to do my talking in the book. Like,
yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. I want like my games to talk for me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like in Rocky V when he says, my ring's outside. Like, my ring is in the book. That's where I'm going to engage with you people is, I'm going to put a product out there and I'm going to ask people to buy it and read it. And then, you know, if you want to argue with me about my book, I'll be able to tell if you haven't read it, but.
Yeah, I want my games to do the talking for me, like you said. And I would rather just be known for like releasing cool games than for being a jerk on Twitter. Like, I don't know, like the first one will actually earn me money for one. It will, it'll get me ahead in life. The second one does nothing for me. It just makes me look like a jerk. So, why would I even engage in it? Plus, I don't know. I don't really like being mean and all that stuff anyway at the end of the day. I will be if I have to, but I don't like it.
Well, and there's this... Twitter is easy. On Twitter, you just like vomit your thoughts out there. And that's what a lot of people... Actually, that's what everyone uses it for. You type up your however many characters you get based on, you know, what tier of Twitter blue you buy into. And you can just kind of vomit your thoughts out there. Something like this, though, something like Modern Necessities, you have to refine your thoughts.
Yeah.
You can't just like yell at someone, hey, guns are cool and you should put them in your D&D game. You have to think through, how's the gun going to work? How does this change the way that classes function? How does this change, all of this stuff? And you design and you refine and you ultimately move from just like a series of scattered opinions to something whole and coherent that has thought and effort and time put into it. And that's, I'm just going to come out and say it. Like, I know not everyone wants to be a creator or has the capacity to be a creator, but that's better than just shouting your opinion on the internet.
Yeah, no, I agree. And one thing I've noticed, and John and me have talked about this, is if you just throw hypotheticals out there about like mechanics and stuff like that, you've got all these people that like disagree with you, that think they know better, they will argue with you. It's like, no, you should do it like this, whatever. If you don't say anything and you just write your game and you release it, people accept it. People will like see your rules. It's like, oh yeah, that's cool. And they won't really argue with you about it. But if I like, you know, go even on the Gilded server, if I go on the Gilded server and I like throw like some hypothetical out there about how to approach like, you know, a gun mechanic, there will be like at least 10 people like throwing out their different opinions and like arguing with me and stuff. But if I just finish Modern Necessities and throw the PDF on there, people will be like, oh, hey, Vic made another Modern Necessities game. Cool. Oh, the guns are neat. you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, another aspect of that, like when you throw out hypotheticals, you find that there's a lot of people who don't actually read the books.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, this should work like this. And then some learned man like Crossface will be like, actually, yeah, it works completely different from that. And it's already in the game that you say you play.
Yeah.
So.
Well, people will also like hyper focus on like one element of your system. Like, say, you know, I'm doing guns a certain way. I'm doing like the damage a certain way, and people will like focus on that. It's like, well, that's not enough damage for a gun. But what they don't know is that it's tied into like four other mechanics that does up the damage or does like something special that makes the gun like extra lethal and stuff. Like, you know, as a creator, you're looking at the whole picture of your game. If you just throw stuff out there, people will just be like, they will just nitpick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you're going about it in the right way.
Yeah.
Authoritative News Network here, gatekept and curated. That's that's kind of the way to move forward
with
all this stuff. It's like, again, there's so much noise out there. There's so much. I'm going to butcher the Shakespeare quote: "Sound and fury, shouted by an idiot, signifying nothing," is the butchered way of putting it. But yeah, just finding the people whose opinions matter to you and are going to make your, you know, make your ideas better and help you refine them, you know, that's those are the voices to seek out. And that's one of the reasons why I love the Guilded server so much, and why I've been glad to hang out with you guys and get to know all you a little bit better, is that's like, that's what it is there. It's a crucible in there. It's great.
Well, I like it because I can talk all the shit I want that I can't on Twitter, and nobody will mind. I can be as rude and as spicy as I want on there, especially in the admin channel.
Yes,
that only a few people can see. But then on Twitter, I'm like, oh, Vic's so nice. But I took example out of creators that I like writers and stuff like that. And like I said, if I like a writer and I go to that Twitter and it's all just like wailing about politics and culture war stuff, it turns me off. If I go to a writer and they're just talking about how cool their book is, and they're talking about like their settings, and they're talking about like writing tips, and maybe, you know, the occasional like joke and stuff like that, I like those people way more. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to style myself after those people. I want to be one of those creators that people will go to hit my Twitter and be like, oh, Vic's such a fun guy. Let's see what he's posting today about modern necessities, or maybe he has like a funny shit post. You know, that's all I want.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than, I think you actually posted the meme of when you go to a writer who you likes Twitter page, and it was like someone making a face or something like that. It's
No, that's happened to me so many times.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I really like your books, but you're such an asshole.
There we go. Chance, thank you. Life is but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Yep, Heavy Turtle Dwarf, exactly. That's literally who I was thinking of when I said that too. Yeah, because I love Turtle Dove's books, and then on Twitter it's like, oof, shut up, old man.
I mean, even and I don't see a whole lot of it. I think he's actually pretty smart about it, but like when Jim Butcher kind of speaks up on cultural issues, I'm just like, ugh, quit it.
Yeah,
right.
Well even Larry Correa sometimes, I'm just like, cool it, Larry, come on, like.
Yeah, I love Larry Correa to death. I love his books, but you know, sometimes I'm just like, you don't have to argue with every single chud on Facebook, Larry.
I actually got him to shut up once because he was like arguing with somebody, and I was like, Larry, that guy's a Melvin. And he was like, you're right. And he like stopped. So.
Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder, like, how many of these guys... How many delayed books are a result of I couldn't put Twitter down?
You mean Patrick Rothfuss's whole career?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Spoony syndrome.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, I hope you guys aren't tired of Vic and I talking, because not only are we going to be doing this tonight, but tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to be doing this again. And then even better, the Wonky is going to be joining us over on Diversity and Dragons channel. So it's going to be nothing but fire and fury. It's going to be a great show. I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. Yeah. I asked if he had like a spot for me, and he was like, yeah, you want to come on with YN and co. And then I asked you just to be sure, because I don't want to step on toes. And
Yeah, that's going to be a blast. And once again, just to remind everyone, let's see how we've done during the conversation. See if we've got any more.
Oh, I lost the backer.
So what?
I lost like 29 euros and then I gained 9 euros. So I didn't really get ahead. Last few days have been kind of rough on my Kickstarter. It's a lot of gaining ground and then immediately losing it again. But apparently that's normal. Rob from Pulp Hammock Press, who's doing Gods of Forbidden North, the second book, he was telling me the same thing. Except, you know, he's at 91,000. I'm at 9,000. So there's a bit of a difference, but yeah.
It's a different perspective.
Yeah. But he's probably seeing more cancellations, though. He's probably seeing like dozens at a time. So, I mean, that's probably hurts.
Yeah, that's one of those things. Like, Wonky and I have been very lucky with cancellations in our campaign. We haven't had any so far. I mean,
yeah,
got lots of wooden things around me that I can knock on here. But something like that would be devastating for us, especially you know, at the number of backers we've got, that could be the difference between like a stretch goal or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That. So,
well, for me at this point, kind of is too. Like, I'm like hovering, I'm about like 1,400 away from like the next stretch goal. And I could have probably at least, like, if all those people hadn't canceled the last few days, I would have probably at least had like 500-600 more now. But whatever. What can you do? Apparently it's normal. Even big Kickstarter people say that, you know, every time somebody cancels, it stinks. So I try not to worry about it too much. Like, at least I'm not alone, you know. If it was just my campaign that people are like canceling, then yeah. But
well, yeah, we are still at $9,419 USD. 11 days to go, so you guys have plenty of time to get in on this. You have no excuse at this point. You can back Modern Necessities Professional Edition. And stretch goals wise, let's see where we're at. The next one to accomplish is the colored highlight version with additional colored art versions of all the books. So that's the next stretch goal. I want to see 15,000 euros, guys. I want to see the omnibus. That'll be cool. Let's do it.
Yeah, the omnibus would be nice, because not everyone wants to buy the separate book, I guess. So.
Yeah, so that's where we're at with Vic's campaign. Share this around, guys. You know, this is fully funded. You're going to get your hands on it. You know, Vic is very good about getting stuff out in a timely manner. This is a good investment of your Kickstarter dollars. There's lots of games out there that people have backed. You're not going to see it for years. Like, face it, you're not going to see it for years. This is one that you're going to see.
Yeah. People that know me and that know my work ethic know that if I set my mind to something and I knuckle down on it, I work really quickly. Like I said, the original Modern Necessities, which was like 96 pages, I wrote in 3 weeks. So I don't think that's anything to sneeze at. So, I hope to have at least the core book out relatively quickly. And then I'm just going to like handle all these stretch goals, you know, one by one. So,
yeah, absolutely. All right. Well,
it's 11 days, Kitty. Sorry, somebody asked something in the chat.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe Kitty is actually, is Patty using his wife's tablet.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering because he mentioned the Gilded server. I was like, I don't know a Kitty on there.
But yeah. 11 days left for you guys to get in on this. So,
I only know my Discord Kitty.
So I have a story about that. I volunteer I volunteer with my church's youth group, and someone was talking about Discord, and every time they bring up like technology that I use, I panic a little bit, because like, what if these kids find like my YouTube channel or something like that?
Yeah.
But they're talking about Discord, and then one of them said, "Are you their Discord kitten?" Talking about one of their friends. And I was just like, I don't want to hear anyone under the age of like 24 use that word. Don't talk about that. Stop that right now.
Yeah.
You're making me feel like your father.
Well, I mean, you are a dad, so.
Yeah, I am, but I mean, like, these kids are 14.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to cover tonight? Any topics we didn't get to that you want to talk about?
Can't really think of anything. Back Modern Necessities, if you haven't yet. You get 4 books for, a pretty reasonable price, in my opinion. If you do take the softcover and hardcover, you do have to pay, like, a little bit of printing costs. But Drive to RPG is pretty reasonable with those as well. And that's why I also kept like the base cost pretty low, because I'm nice like that. I mean, we've all seen those Kickstarters where it's like, like €50 or $50 for like a PDF, and you're like, what? So, but yeah, even if you get the €9 PDF, which is like what, like $10, maybe, you get like 4 PDFs. So,
Yeah, like that goddamn Shield Maidens thing. Or it was like $35 for a PDF or something like that. Like, no, come on. Be reasonable.
And then, it's like 120 pages or whatever. Like, okay, so if it's something like Gods of the Forbidden North, where you get like 500 page, like, part of like a giant mega adventure, sure, I'll pay a little bit more for that. But I'm not paying like $30 for like a 100 page PDF that's mostly art.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Vic, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. It's always a blast just to, come on and talk about stuff like this, especially with a project like this coming down the pipe. This is awesome. I'm over the moon that you have been as successful as you've been this time around. And
Same.
I hope that you just keep stacking wins like this.
I'm hoping that, the next one that does, if like every Kickstarter I do, I double the funds. I mean, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Who knows?
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to Rolling Bones. I'm glad that you enjoyed the show. Next week, I'm not sure what I've got going on. I'll keep you guys posted on what we'll be doing, but we will be back right here next week. Same time as always. So until then, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I'm so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard. Catch me and Vic and Wonky on Diversity and Dragons tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central. And until then, I'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.